Oakley and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
In 2017, President Trump took office with an inaugural address that spoke of American carnage. In 2021, President Biden took office calling to lower the temperature and the raging fires of politics. In 2025, Trump takes office a second time. What does he say? We'll hear it. I'm Steve Inskeep. Join us for live special coverage of Inauguration Day from NPR News.
Live special coverage starts Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Who's the scariest character you know? Voldemort, maybe, or Pennywise, the clown from It? What if I told you more people consider Judy Blume and her books about adolescent life much scarier? Find out why on the next Selected Shorts as we explore banned writers with Blume herself.
Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character on WJFF Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and today my guest is writer Busy Coy. Busy grew up in the suburbs of Rochester, New York, on the shores of Lake Ontario, and now resides in Yulin, New York. She is the recipient not only of a 2020-2021 Fulbright Fellowship to Ireland, but many other awards. Busy has had her work published in McSweeney's and The New Yorker, to name two, and in the first half of the show, she'll be reading her piece for us, published in The New Yorker in 2017, entitled, I'm More Than a Mother. Her first book, Personal Space, is a collection of short humor pieces, and she is, in my humble opinion, very, very funny. And who doesn't need a laugh these days? So let's get to it. Busy, welcome to Catskill Character.
Thanks, Donna. It's such an honor to be here.
You know, as I mentioned in the intro, you grew up in a town outside of Rochester, New York, on the shores of Lake Ontario. So I guess you're used to the cold. But you told me that you and your brother spent quite a lot of time indoors watching TV. You said, and I quote, you consumed a lot of comedy. What were some of those shows?
Oh, yes. My brother and I loved to come home after school when nobody was there for a magical hour and watch the comedy TV we were not allowed to watch on Comedy Central. And in those days, we would watch old reruns of Saturday Night Live. We would watch The Kids in the Hall, the Canadian sketch TV show. We enjoyed also Whose Line Is It Anyway?, the short form improv show. We loved it all. And we just laughed ourselves silly, also knowing that we weren't supposed to be watching this stuff, which made it even more delicious.
So do you think that these shows were an influence insofar as you becoming a humorist?
I absolutely do. I think watching comedy and, you know, firstly, kind of connecting with the show itself, then connecting with my brother. And that was sort of a bond in our relationship. And we do, even to this day, have very similar senses of humor. And then realizing that comedy was a way to bond with other people, a way to make somebody smile or make somebody laugh. You know, if you see your parents having a hard day and you can get them to crack a smile, that's very powerful as a child. That's an intoxicating amount of power. And then even in school, you know, to crack a joke or make somebody laugh becomes social currency. And I think those shows sort of gave me a foundation of understanding what does comedy sound like? What are the rhythms? And I began to kind of absorb that at a young age.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you were funny in school, if you found that as a way, you know, entertaining your friends at school as a really important part of your whole school experience.
You know, I don't think I was necessarily a class clown. In fact, I know I wasn't. I think I was very concerned with being good and being well-behaved. And I probably had some personality, but I don't think I was, you know, super funny in the way that you would imagine, you know, a comedian growing up and going to school.
Have you ever been in contact with any friends from school who have maybe seen something in the New Yorker that you did and wrote to you and said, my God, you're so funny?
Aw, you know, the friends that I'm still in touch with from school, they certainly are very complimentary and kind. But I don't think I've had anyone like from the distant past reach out and say, oh, you're so funny. But that would be nice if they did.
Yeah. So you majored in theater at college. Did you perform in a lot of comedies?
Yeah, I did major in theater at SUNY Geneseo. Talk about cold. Walking the tundra to class every day. And I did a lot of work behind the scenes and on stage, but I didn't do a lot of comedy. And I really don't think I discovered comedy as a performance tool really until my junior or senior years. I was always sort of a musical theater kid, singing and acting. And not all musical theater is super funny. Some of it is more dramatic. But then I did a couple of shows later in college, and doing the funny parts just felt right. It felt so good, and I felt like I understood it. And to hear an audience laugh, to know you can get a room full of people to laugh, again, is a very intoxicating feeling. And another thing in college that was fun to explore was this twice a year musical theater review that I was part of, where we would perform songs from musicals, and a lot of them were kind of funny. And in between, we would write skits, like SNL kind of skits, to sort of pad out the show. And that was my first time writing comedy to be performed on a stage. And again, with the goal, the explicit goal of how do we make people laugh, and trying to figure that out was just an incredible amount of fun.
Now, as far as your writing goes, is that something that you've always done?
I wrote a little bit as a child, in the way that you write little stories and illustrate them in school. I enjoyed reading a lot, which I think was a huge foundation for me. The reading, just like watching comedy, reading, writing helps you understand the rhythms of writing and the stylistic points of writing. But it wasn't really until I was in my 20s that I thought writing might be for me. And it really wasn't until I moved to Sullivan County, I moved to Yulin full time in 2013, that I actually began pursuing writing in earnest. So there was a huge gap of time for me that was mostly filled with theatrical pursuits, to be honest. But then writing emerged as sort of a new creative pursuit for me, thanks to Sullivan County.
Well, you definitely made that successful leap from performing in front of an audience to writing. And we're going to get a sample of that busy, coy humor right now. Before you start, please, if you would remind the listener what you're about to read.
Yes, so I'm going to read a story from my new book called Personal Space. The story is titled I'm More Than a Mother, and this was originally published on May 14th, 2017 in The New Yorker. I'm More Than a Mother. It's true what they say. When you have kids, your whole life changes. Many of us moms neglect our own needs as we focus all our energy on caring for our offspring, which is why I sometimes have to take a deep breath and remind myself, I'm more than a mother. I'm a convicted felon. And that's just one of the many facets of my non-maternal identity. Sure, I'm Finley's mom, and I couldn't be happier about it. I'm also human. I'm a woman. I'm someone who calls elderly people on the phone, pretending to work at the IRS, and convincing them that they will lose their homes if they don't pay their taxes immediately. Then I get their credit card and social security numbers and steal all their money, just like little Finley stole my heart. After a child comes into your life, it can be tough to remember who you were before. Suddenly, your criminal past seems like it belongs to someone else. When I'm overwhelmed by a mountain of dirty diapers, I schedule me time to do something I love, like manufacturing fake erectile dysfunction pills to sell on the dark web. because I'm more than a mom. I'm a business person. I'm a pharmaceutical counterfeiter, and I'm legally required to contact my parole officer every 2 weeks. Before I had Finley, I thought that motherhood would be a piece of cake, like the time I tricked that lonely woman on the internet into thinking I was an unhappily married man, then cleaned out her bank account by promising to run away with her if she paid off my medical school debts. It turns out being a mom isn't as easy as all that. I don't let it get me down, though. After I kiss Finley goodnight, I sit in my meditation chair and whisper into the darkness, I'm more than this. I'm a catfisher. I'm a medical school dropout. I'm a wife. That's right, I'm married. A couple of years ago, I was running a Music Man-style scam. I'd breeze into rural areas and woo the townsfolk with promises of an unlicensed production of the musical, The Music Man, which, to avoid copyright infringement, I called A Music Man. I had just convinced the residents of Slimsock, Alabama, to invest their money, and I was planning to skip town the very next day when who should walk into my fake auditions but a handsome, wealthy gentleman with a heart condition named Bucknell Ambergory. In an instant, I had a new grift to pursue. I immediately cast Bucknell as A Music Man's leading man, known for copyright reasons as Professor Gerald Chill. I settled down in Slimsock, Alabama to see the musical through, which was quite a challenge considering I hadn't procured performance rights, scripts, scores, costumes, or sets. It didn't matter. By the time the final curtain fell on my ill-planned production, Bucknell Ambergory was madly in love with me. He proposed, we were married, and I got pregnant with little Finley. I suggested that Bucknell take out a large life insurance policy and make me the sole beneficiary. Then I flushed his heart medication and hired local celebrity Fingers the Clown to jump out of Bucknell's closet in the middle of the night and scare him to death. Yes, I'm a widow. I'm an acquitted murderer. I'm the primary inheritor of the property and assets of Bucknell Ambergory, pending civil litigation instigated by his adult children, who are bitter because I did not cast them in A Music Man. Just a mom? Not me. Would a mom fall in love with Fingers the Clown? When Finley eventually heads off to college, I don't anticipate a deep existential struggle to figure out who I am without him. I'll be the same person I always was, a grifter, a fugitive from the law, a woman who sells Girl Scout cookie boxes filled with crumpled newspaper for $10 a pop on Tinder. Speaking of college, I'm in the midst of fundraising for Finley's higher education. I want to make sure my baby has everything he needs to achieve his dreams. I guess that's the mom in me. I know what you're thinking, and yes, you can play a part in making Finley's dreams come true. Just tell me your full name, credit card number, security code, expiration date, billing zip code, and cashback limit. Here's a picture of Finley. Isn't he the cutest? Look at those round cheeks and that blonde hair. No, that's not a photo of Prince George from People magazine. How would I even obtain such a photo? By doing a Google image search? You sound crazy. Of course Finley exists. You can trust me. I'm his mother. And so much more.
You know, Busy, what is so funny right from the get-go in this piece is the way you introduce yourself as this caring mother who, like so many other mothers, can neglect her own needs, and then you at times have to remind yourself that you're more than a mother. You're a convicted felon. I mean, I don't think anyone reading that for the first time will see that coming. It's a perfect setup. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Busy. I love that piece. And as Busy said, it's in her book, Personal Space. And it was also published in The New Yorker in 2017. So speaking of The New Yorker, we're going to be talking about your cartoons in The New Yorker. But first, we'll take a quick break and then come right back with more Busy Coy. Stay tuned.
There's always a story behind the music, how the song was written, why the song was written. I'm Kathy Geary. Join me for Now and Then. Now and Then, Saturday afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Hi, I'm Eddie Robinson, and on this special edition of ICU, we honor and pay tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
The one thing that my son could not wrap his head around was if Dr. King was such a good guy, Mommy, why did the bad guys hurt him?
New York Times bestselling author Tammy Charles.
When he asked that question, I said, oh, God, here we go, you know?
A special presentation in place of Radio Catskill, Monday morning at 10.
Welcome back to Catskill Character with me, your host, Donna Fellenberg, and today's guest, Yulon New York's Busy Coy. In the first half of the show, we learned a bit about Busy's early years, and she read her short humor piece, I'm More Than a Mother, included in Coy to the World, 40 Years of Busy, that she put out last March to commemorate her 40th birthday. In the second half of the show, Busy will discuss the Fulbright Fellowship she won in 2020, her recently released first book entitled Personal Space, and submitting cartoons to The New Yorker. Here we go. Busy, let's talk first about those cartoons, submitting them to The New Yorker. I imagine that's quite a feat. Can you walk us through the process and tell us about the artist who draws the cartoons?
Yes, I've been collaborating with Narrowsburg and Berryville, New York artist Leah Strasser to submit and publish cartoons in The New Yorker. Leah's an incredible artist, and our process changes all the time. One of us will instigate an idea. Usually Leah will say, I had an idea about this, and then we'll talk about it, and I'll put my spin on the idea, or I'll polish the caption with a little wordsmithing, and Leah will do a drawing. Sometimes I have an idea, and I say, what about this? And Leah will suggest what it might look like. We have so many documents and PowerPoint presentations with slides, with images and captions on them, so much so that we have this huge folder of all of the ideas that are in process. And once a week, approximately, sometimes it's less if we don't get our act together in time, we put together what we call a batch, and that could be 5 to 10 cartoons, and we email it to the cartoon inbox at The New Yorker, and then we cross our fingers and bite our nails and wait to hear if any of our cartoons have been selected.
How long have the two of you been doing this?
We started collaborating in February of 2024. So it's coming up on 1 year.
Wow. So you've already had two cartoons accepted by The New Yorker. I'm betting there's going to be more.
I hope so.
Busy, we have got to talk about the Fulbright Fellowship. What's the process like for that, even to apply for such an auspicious award?
Yeah, so I applied for the Fulbright Scholarship, and it was a huge undertaking. It's the largest application process I've personally ever attempted. It took several months of very hard work, writing essays, polishing essays, consulting with people, procuring letters of recommendation, and in the midst of all of it, applying to college for the scholarship that I hope to attain. So there was a whole separate college admissions process mm-hmm. in the middle of the Fulbright process. So it was a lot of work, but it was definitely worth it.
Well, we should add that you were there, if anyone's paying attention to those dates, you were there during COVID. But you did manage to really enjoy those 9 months in Ireland, and you earned a master's degree. Was that in creative writing?
Yes, I did earn my master's in creative writing at Dublin City University in the midst of 2020, when the whole city and the whole country of Ireland was in a state of lockdown. And so I spent a lot of time in my dorm room, which in a way worked out because I had a lot of writing and reading assignments to do for my master's program. So kind of being stuck at home ended up working out for me. I got a lot of work done.
Now, did you do the classes online?
Yes. Strangely enough, I was required to be in the country of Ireland to fulfill my Fulbright fellowship. However, all of our classes were held over Zoom. So it was a very strange event.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. That is really such an incredible accomplishment.
Thank you so much.
And now, you said something when we previously spoke that really stuck with me about your shift in the way you think about your success as a writer, how you gauge that success. I'd love for you to share that with the listener.
Yeah, I would say for the 10 years in which I've been really actively pursuing creative writing, I've been very focused on accomplishments and achievements and goals and publishing. And I've recently had a mindset shift where instead of worrying about those things, I'm more concerned about how can I create community? How can I use my work to benefit my own neighbors? And how can I publish in my own backyard? And by focusing on a more community-driven set of goals, I've just found so much more personal enjoyment in my writing in the past year that I've been sort of following this new mindset of mine.
That's fantastic. And as if to prove your point, please tell the listener what you'll be doing in the next couple of months right here in your own community.
Yes. So in support of my new book, Personal Space, I have several events coming up soon. On Sunday, January 19th from 2 to 4 p.m., I'll be at Chester Studio on 16 Old Brook Road in Berryville, New York, where I'll be doing a book reading. And that will be accompanied by live art by the book cover designer, Catherine Chesters, as well as the illustrator, Leah Strasser, my New Yorker cartoon collaborator. And that's a free event. Everyone's welcome. And then on Sunday, January 26th, starting at noon at Seminary Hill Cidery in Calicoon, I'll be reading a true story at Yarnslingers. The event theme is winter, so I'll be joined by other storytellers, and all of us will be telling stories about winter, and my book will be available there. And then on Saturday, February 8th, from 1 to 3 p.m., I'll be at Sullivan Public, the event space in Eldred, directly behind the Sunshine Hall Free Library, where I'll be offering a workshop and discussion about publishing and publishing your writing. And for that one, registration is required, and you can learn more at sullivanpublic.com.
Good to know. Is there anything else coming up besides these three events that you might mention?
So then moving on to March, I will be speaking at Sage Sessions on March 8th at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. So that's for folks age 60 plus. I'll be doing a reading and a Q&A and selling and signing my book.
Oh, that's great. You know, I didn't think we were going to have time for this, but we actually do. I'd love for you to talk about your Saturday Night Live dreams.
Oh, sure, Donna. When I were talking about dreams, and I told you one of my recurring dreams is that I work at Saturday Night Live, which is funny to me because I've never worked at Saturday Night Live, yet my dreams are filled with very vivid imagery and very specific details of the offices and the backstage areas and the personnel who also work there. They're very realistic. And I find it so funny that it's almost like a stress dream of a job I used to work at, but I never actually worked there.
So what happens in the dreams?
So usually I'm working in some capacity. I've had dreams where I'm a writer, where I'm an actor, where I'm an intern and it's my first day. And there's usually something that I have to like fix or accomplish, which is why I think it must be kind of a stress dream. And then I'm kind of scurrying around, often, you know, going through the tangled backstage areas and riding elevators and trying to figure out whatever the problem is at hand.
You know what's so funny about this dream or these dreams? They're kind of like those dreams that you have when you're going to go to a test and you're not prepared. But the thing that makes this stick out to me is you're a writer on Saturday Night Live, which is, that's like the pinnacle of comedy sketch writing, is it not?
Oh, that would certainly be, you know, the top of the heap.
So here you are, you're at the top of the heap, but you're running around. It's like you're not that you're lost, but it's almost like you're not prepared exactly, but you're at the top of the heap. So,
yeah, it is exactly like a high school test dream to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny. Yeah. And if I had to really sit down and analyze it, I would go, you know, it's a reminder that even when you are at the pinnacle of a career in real life, you know, things aren't perfect and nothing's perfect. And you're always going to have a little stress and a little agita, you know, no matter how far you get in your career. And that's okay.
You know, Busy, that is such an incredible thing to bring up right now in this time that we're living in after these fires in California, because, you know, people forget that people who are wealthy, and not everybody who has been living in the Pacific Palisades is wealthy, but they keep talking about the stars that lost their homes. But it's a reminder of no matter where you are, who you are, we're all just humans, right?
You know? Absolutely. We're all people, and people all, you know, we all deserve safety and we all deserve a roof over our heads.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Busy, you know, it's been so much fun having you on. I can't believe that we're actually ending on sort of a down note, but that's not what I meant it for. I just thought you were bringing up a very good point that we're all human beings. But it's really been so much fun having you on, and I've really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, I appreciate it so much, Donna. It's so lovely to speak with you.
You've been listening to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill with me, your host, Donna Fellenberg, and today's guest, Yulin, New York resident and short fiction and short humor writer, Busy Coy. We spoke about Busy's Fulbright Scholarship, and she has also received fellowships from the New York State Council for the Arts and New York Foundation for the Arts Artist Fellowship and the McDowell Foundation. Aside from her writing, Busy is a freelance copywriter. You can purchase Busy's book, Personal Space, at Busy's website, busycoy.com. And it's also for sale at One Grand Books in Narrowsburg, New York. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30 a.m., except for the last Saturday of the month, when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs. Be sure to join us then for more fantastic stories from fabulous characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, could a new set of rules restore trust to academia?
These are not one-off cases. You have to fix it.
But is academia even capable of changing?
I think that my generation fought against the open science movement for far too long.
The hidden side of academic fraud. That's next time on Freakonomics Radio, Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, Secretary of State Antony Blinken on a path to peace in the Middle East.
I've also had many opportunities to meet with Prime Minister Netanyahu. And when the conversation comes to normalization with Saudi Arabia, he knows that for Israel, too, that would be an absolute game changer.
Antony Blinken's exit interview, next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour. Listen Sunday at 6 for the New Yorker Radio Hour on Radio Catskill.
WJFF, Jeffersonville.
From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.